Hi, folks. This is Mary Alice Conroy. And recently, COLI, which is APA's Committee on Legal Issues, teamed up with the Ethics Committee of APA to present a symposium called Subpoenas, Court Orders, and Other Legal Oddities. And it was designed as a stress reducer, hopefully, for practitioners. What we did was create four scenarios and discuss kind of our analysis on the legal and ethical issues in each one of them. And so today what I want to do is take one of those scenarios and talk with you about the implications. Now, specifically that scenario says, a therapist receives a subpoena deuces tecum from his patient's attorney relating to a sexual harassment lawsuit that his patient filed against her former employer. The attorney wants the therapist to appear in court with his therapy notes and testify regarding the damages his client suffered as a result of the alleged sexual harassment. Okay, let's start with the scary part, the subpoena deuces tecum. All a subpoena deuces tecum means is it's a subpoena for your appearance and for you to bring specific documents. And very commonly with a subpoena deuces tecum, they take them. They take them everything. Now, when you receive one of these regarding one of your patients, probably the first thing you need to do is consult with that patient. Talk about what's in the records, talk about your knowledge of her case, and talk about whether that patient wants to release all of this to the attorney for possible use in court. And if the answer to that is yes, it sort of simplifies life and that patient signs a release and you're good to go. However, it may not be that simple. And the important thing to remember about a subpoena is that you have to respond, but you do not necessarily need to comply. There's a lot of room for negotiation. And if there is some reason that your patient does not want to release this information, wants to release only part of the information, wants you to testify, does not want you to testify, you may want to negotiate with the person who issued the subpoena, which if it's simply an attorney is easier. It's more complicated if it's a judge. And more binding if it's a judge. But you can still negotiate. And what I usually recommend to people from my years of experience in this is do it as informally as possible. In other words, don't start by hiring an attorney and seeing if you can get a motion to quash. That's the last resort. Easiest way I've found to deal with this is simply to call or meet with the person who issued the subpoena and talk about what your problem is. And what I've found over 30 years in about 99.9% of cases, you can negotiate a reasonable accommodation that fits both of your needs. Okay, then let's look at the second part of the scenario. Once you've understood how to deal with the subpoena, it says the attorney wants the therapist to appear in court with his therapy notes and testify regarding, and this is the important part, the damages his client suffered as a result of the alleged sexual harassment. Now, when we look at the issue at hand there, it is clearly a forensic issue, not a treatment one. And you don't want to serve in two roles that conflict regarding a patient. What the literature says, what the specialty guidelines for forensic psychologists says, is do not serve as a forensic evaluator for anyone you're treating in therapy. That is the destructive dual role. So that would be one thing that you would want to talk with the attorney about and say, you know, you really just can't ethically do this. Second issue, when it talks about testifying on the damages the client suffered as a result of the alleged sexual harassment, you clearly have a forensic issue. In fact, you have the third of four elements of a tort. Elements of a tort are a duty. The duty's been breached. There are damages. And the breach of duty was the proximal cause of those damages. As a therapist, you would not have done an analysis of those issues. Give you a couple of reasons why. For one thing, your therapy may not even focus on this particular issue, certainly not as a single issue. Or if it did, you haven't done an investigation of the allegations. You haven't sought out witnesses. You haven't sought out collateral information. Most commonly, and appropriately, therapists simply believe what their patients are telling them, and that does not work for a forensic evaluation. If you were doing an evaluation of this in addition to investigating the incident, well, you'd need to investigate a lot of past history, any previous or simultaneous events that might have contributed to this person's psychopathology, any competing explanations you could possibly come up with other than this alleged incident of sexual harassment. Maybe you have, for example, an eggshell plaintiff, by which we mean someone who is particularly vulnerable at a particular point in time, and that vulnerability contributes to the damages. Again, as a therapist, there's no reason you would have done any of that. And so you can say to the attorney, quite honestly, you know, I'm sorry, I haven't evaluated those legal damages, and I certainly can't testify to them. Question then, could you testify at all? Well, you could testify if it would be helpful to your patient as what we call a treating expert. And as a treating expert, you would testify to what's in your records, perhaps the diagnosis, perhaps the treatment plan, the treatment provided, the progress made, the prognosis. All of those things require expertise. They're not simply facts, but they're not part of a forensic evaluation. They're well within the purview of the therapist. If you do that, however, one thing is essential. Be sure, and so many people don't do this, be sure that you sit down and meet with the attorney who is presenting your direct examination prior to your appearance in court. You and the attorney have to be in agreement on what questions he's going to ask, what language he's going to use, what order the questions are going to be in, to best present your testimony in such a way that it will be helpful to your patient and helpful to the trier of fact. It is very ethical to do that. In fact, I would almost go so far as to say it's unethical not to. So, what are the take-home messages in this brief? Number one, if you get a subpoena, even when it says, you are commanded under pain of punishment, remember that language is legal language, but in reality you have to respond to a subpoena, but you don't necessarily have to comply. There's room to negotiate. When you receive a subpoena regarding a patient or a patient's record, what you're going to want to do is consult with that patient. Do they want to release this? Do they understand what they're releasing? Are they willing to sign the release? And if not, what compromises are there? What concerns do they have? Then negotiate with an attorney, but start informally. Often things can be resolved very, very quickly on an informal level without further cost, heartache, or anxiety to you. Then when it gets to what issue the attorney wants you to address, don't mix forensic and treatment roles. Don't do a forensic evaluation or pretend to have done a forensic evaluation when you really haven't, when you're really the treating professional. And then finally, if you do go to court and an attorney is going to present your direct examination, meet with that person to prepare well before you actually step onto the witness stand. It will make your testimony so much better, so much more effective, so much more helpful to the trier of fact. I hope this short discussion of this scenario has been helpful to you. I hope COLI is helpful to you.